Today, on the exam room.
True or false, Dr. Barnard, humans evolved by eating meat, and switching to a plant-based diet will negatively alter my mitochondria.
Well, first of all, unless your parents were a cat or a dog, you did not evolve by eating meat. We are, whether we like it or not, in the family of great apes. That's chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, orangutans. And if you look back at our distant ancestors, they are either entirely or mostly plant-based. And meat eating didn't really begin for our ancestors until the advent of the Stone Age. And paleoanthropologists tell us that once people had stone tools, that's when you could actually perhaps take a carcass and cut the meat off. And when you had fire, then it was something really edible. But no, we did not evolve eating meat.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I'm the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world. Hi to the Exam Roomies listening in Las Cruces, New Mexico, High Point, North Carolina, and Thessaloniki, Greece. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 36 of season 7, number 535 overall. Look, I don't need to tell you that the internet is filled with misinformation, but today is all about speaking the truth about the vegan diet, and we're doing it by answering your questions, true or false, right here on the exam room. Haven't done a true or false before. So, true or false, a poor diet can cause all types of health challenges. True. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that. So today we're going beyond that scope. We're talking everything from heart disease to obesity to cancer and beyond. But what about the vegan diet in particular? Talking the biggest misconceptions about giving up meat and dairy and what it actually means for your health. And helping us with our truth seeking is a man who is the author of a new book, The Power Foods Diet. A powerful book that is chock full of research on this very subject. Dr. Neil Barnard is back with us on the Exam Room Live, here to answer your questions, true or false, about your diet and your health. So just a few things that are on tap today. True or false, changing your diet will change your DNA. True or false, high-carb diets harm the immune system. True or false, vegans are more likely to have anemia. And true or false, most vegans don't get enough calcium. We're going to find out. So let's get rolling right now with Dr. Neil Barnard here on the exam room. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Chuck.
How often do you get asked about these big myths when it comes to a vegan diet, a plant-based diet, or any other kind of diet for that matter?
All the time. They come up in research studies that we do. They come up in our clinic. But they also just come up when you're talking with people casually, because people have some impressions that may or may not be right.
All right. Well, today we're going to give them the right impression. And we're doing it in the form of true and false questions. We haven't really done this before on the show. So basically what we've got is a ton of questions from exam roomies who have submitted them. And we're turning them into true or false, just so that everybody can get on board, get to the truth when it comes to eating healthier and improving their health. Yep, for the challenge?
You bet.
All right. The first question comes to us from Bobby, and it's a humdinger of one right out of the gate. True or false, Dr. Barnard, humans evolved by eating meat, and switching to a plant-based diet will negatively alter my mitochondria.
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, unless your parents were a cat or a dog, you did not evolve by eating meat. We are, whether we like it or not, in the family of great apes. That's chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, orangutans. And if you look back at our distant ancestors, they are either entirely or mostly plant-based. And meat eating didn't really begin for our ancestors until the advent of the Stone Age. And paleoanthropologists tell us that once people had stone tools, that's when you could actually perhaps take a carcass and cut the meat off. And when you had fire, then it was something really edible. But no, we did not evolve eating meat.
So don't have to worry about doing irreparable damage to our DNA. Not going to have to worry about passing bad things down to the next generation and the generation after that, because we're loading up on plants.
Yes, exactly. You will do no harm to your DNA, to your mitochondria, to any other part of you. Plant-based diet is what you're designed for, if I can put it that way.
There you go. All right. Question now from Jamie. We get this one a lot in some form or fashion. Jamie is wondering, true or false, Dr. Barnard, it is impossible to meet every nutritional requirement when eating a plant-based diet.
Sorry, false. A plant-based diet gives you the protein you need, the minerals you need, the vitamins you need, and vitamin B12 that you might add is also plant-based as well.
So vitamin B12, though, I mean, we are told to supplement with a vitamin B12. So does that then say, well, okay, maybe you need a little bit of external help there, and that's not necessarily something you're going to be able to get through just eating something?
Well, with regard to vitamin B12, if you go way, way back, the natural source is not animals or plants, it's bacteria. And bacteria make vitamin B12, and presumably meat eaters would get some B12 because the bacteria in the gut of a cow will make B12 that gets into the meat and the milk. And people have talked about the bacteria in the soil, on plants, in our mouths, on our fingers, that would have given us the B12 we naturally need. Now, modern hygiene has pretty much taken that out of the picture. So many products are actually fortified with B12. Look at your breakfast cereal, for example. You'll often see B12 added. But I do encourage people, I encourage everybody on a vegan diet to take a supplement because that's going to be good insurance.
Let me ask you this. Is the food for cattle that is raised for slaughter, is that fortified with B12 as well? Or is that a vitamin that the cattle ranchers and other CAFO operators really don't worry about?
It can be, but the gut of a cow will actually produce B12. Well, the cows don't make B12. The bacteria that are living in their gut will make B12. Now, the same is true for you. Your gut bacteria, humans' gut bacteria make B12 as well, but the thought is that the absorption is probably pretty low.
Fair enough. All right, let's move on. Take a question from Alex. True or false? You mentioned protein just a second ago. True or false from Alex, a vegan diet only has about half the amount of protein as a regular diet.
Well, first of all, false. The amount of protein in a diet varies dramatically depending on what your choices are. So an omnivorous diet or a vegan diet can vary from low to high. But if you ate nothing but broccoli all day, not that you would do this, but if you, let's say you eat 2,000 calories a day, which is a pretty good average, and all you ate was broccoli, you would actually get three times the amount of protein that the government says you ought to be having. That's true for lentils and many other common foods. So hopefully you're not eating just broccoli, but you're having some vegetables, some fruits, some beans, some whole grains, and you will get plenty of protein. It may be less than is in a really heavy meaty diet, but it'll be more than you need.
And let's jump to a question from Avery. You were just kind of touching on this. Avery is wondering, well, how complicated is this? So true or false, a vegan diet requires careful combinations of food to ensure getting a complete amount of protein?
Oh, that's false, but I think Avery can be forgiven for believing this because there was a lot of writing in the past, particularly in the 1980s, 1990s, and so forth, saying that you needed to carefully combine proteins. The idea was to have grains with beans because neither one had all the essential amino acids. We now know that that's not true. In fact, at our International Conference on Nutrition in Medicine last year, Christopher Gardner from Stanford came and said, spoiler alert, basically, all plants have all the essential amino acids. People thought, well, maybe just quinoa. It's all of them. Now, it's still good to get a mixture. You don't want to rely on just one food, but you don't have to do careful combining.
All right. And let's put this one to bed here. Finish up with a question from Jordan. You kind of hinted to it, but let's go more direct. True or false, protein in plants, none of it is considered to be a complete protein.
All of it is considered a complete protein. So sorry, false.
Okay, true or false? Let's move on and talk about iron. Take a question from Sam. True or false? Man, they're coming fast today. You can only get an adequate amount of iron by eating red meat or organ meat.
Oh, my goodness sakes. That's false, but boy, is that an important issue. Because back in the 1950s, the whole idea was you need lots of iron, the more the better. Have a liver, have red meat, or buy Geritol, which was the supplement that would provide iron for you. And it was not too long after that that people discovered that getting too much iron is dangerous. It leads to heart disease, and it can lead to, we believe, to dementia as well. So you want to be in the sweet spot for iron. Plants get you there. They have adequate iron, but it's in a special form called non-heme iron that's more absorbable if you are low in iron and you need more. But if you already have lots of iron, then the non-heme iron becomes less absorbable, so it doesn't push you into overdose. Now, meat has a form called heme iron, and that just barges into your party whether you need it or not. So sometimes people on meaty diets get iron overloaded, and that's a huge concern now.
What is the major concern? I believe you and I have talked on previous episodes about an increased risk for Alzheimer's. Are there some other considerations to be taken into account here?
Yeah, Alzheimer's is the new one that people are really talking a lot about, but it's already been established for quite a number of years that excess iron can damage the cardiovascular health. There's a condition called hemochromatosis. Won't be on the test, but it does mean that people tend to carry too much iron in their blood, and heart disease is the big issue with hemochromatosis. And so this is a serious problem. These people have more iron. Nobody envies them that. The doctor doesn't praise them. What the doctor does is treat them. And in some cases, you treat them by drawing blood and throwing their iron away. Sounds like old sort of leech bleeding from the Middle Ages, but that's still a common treatment for hemochromatosis. So too much iron is not a good thing for you.
Very interesting. Take a question from Caitlin. You just mentioned that the iron that is found in plants, not necessarily as absorbable as what is in red meat, you say, which just barges into the party whether you want it to or not. So Caitlin is wondering, true or false, vegans are more prone to anemia?
They actually are not. Researchers have studied this question, and you draw blood samples and you look for blood counts. And what you find is that a vegan is no more likely to be anemic than a meat eater. Now, anemia can occur. And when anemia occurs, you can look at the diet, but you also have to look, are they bleeding somewhere? Or does a woman have excessive menstrual flow? Or is there something going on? Colorectal cancer is what's always in the back of a doctor's mind if somebody's anemic later in life. But a vegan diet is not going to set you up for anemia. Now, that said, you do want iron-rich foods, and the green leafy vegetables, the beans, man, they get you there pretty easily.
A little bit of vitamin C with the greens and the mixed vegetables goes a long way to help absorb that calcium, right?
Yeah,
or
that's
iron,
right.
Rather.
No, that's exactly right. If it's consumed along with it, yeah, it's going to help you. But you're not going to become iron deficient. Make sure these things are in your diet, and you should do well.
All right. I mentioned calcium because that's the next question from Taylor. True or false, most vegans don't get enough calcium. We hear about that coming from milk and dairy so often. You take that out of your diet, calcium becomes a concern for Taylor.
Well, let me give a qualified answer on this one. Many vegans don't get enough calcium. And frankly, I think many meat eaters don't get enough calcium. It varies all over the map, but there's a lot of people who don't. And the reason why is because they're not eating their green leafy vegetables. After all, a dairy cow doesn't make calcium. The dairy cow gets calcium from grass, green leafy vegetables. And we should be doing the same, hopefully not grass, but broccoli and the other green leafy vegetables give us the calcium we need. And so if you're doing that, no, you're at no more risk of being calcium deficient than anybody else. But a lot of people, no matter what their diets are like with regard to meat, are not getting the greens they need. So I think people should make sure to include them. Green leafy vegetables have a highly absorbable form of calcium. A couple of exceptions, spinach, chard, they have a lot of calcium. The absorption is low, but broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, really high absorption fraction. In fact, give a quick number. For milk, calcium is about 32% absorbable. It has a lot of calcium, but only about 32% is absorbed. Brussels sprouts, double that. 64.
All right, let's do omega-3s. Take a question from Morgan here. True or false, plant-based sources of omega-3s are inferior to fish-based sources that we hear more about?
Sorry, false. There are two essential fatty acids that the body needs. One is called alpha-linolenic acid, and that is sort of the granddaddy of all omega-3s. Your body uses that and makes it into other forms. And so it's people know about chia and flax. They're very rich in it. But there is alpha-linolenic acid in a great many plants. It's in green leafy vegetables and many others. But now there's another vegan source, and this is a little more recent. If you go to the health food store, on the shelf, they will have fish oil. And it will say this contains EPA and DHA, which are the long chain omega-3 fatty acids. But right next to them are vegan DHA and EPA. Is that in some way inferior? No, it's exactly the same. It just doesn't smell like a fish. So, and you can get the, you, yes, it's true. You can get these online. So no, the vegan omega-3 is what nature had in mind for you.
Are those made from seaweed and kelp and sources like that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. They're algae derived.
Gotcha.
Which is where the fish got them, but you're not processing them through the fish.
Cutting out the middleman. Let's go back to B12 for a second. Casey, with a follow-up there. True or false, Dr. Barnard, when vegans are taking a B12 supplement, they're still likely to be deficient in it?
False. B12 is highly absorbable from supplements. In fact, we've known for a long time that some people become low in B12, particularly after the age of 50, because they're relying only on meat or something for it, and they don't have enough stomach acid to really pull the B12 off the protein. Or people might be on metformin or an acid-blocking drug, metformin used for diabetes, and that blocks B12 absorption too. The U.S. government says that everybody over the age of 50 should be supplementing for this reason, and the supplements are highly absorbable. And they're absorbable whether you've got stomach acid or not. So no, you're going to be fine.
Ooh, I think Quinn's question is going to be a big one for a lot of people. True or false? High-carb diets can cause you to gain weight and negatively impact your immune system.
Oh, my. Well, first of all, false. And why are we picking on carbohydrate? Let me tell you, back in 2005, we published a big study in the American Journal of Medicine. We brought in 64 people. It was entirely women after menopause, and they had tried every diet. They had done low carb. They had done Atkins, South Beach. They had done Jenny Craig. They had done Nutrisystem, everything. But we put them, half of them, on a vegan diet, plant-based diet, and the others on a more common diet, the National Cholesterol Education Program diet, chicken, fish, that kind of thing. But on the vegan diet, what we discovered is people's carbohydrate intake did increase a lot. Because we said, eat rice, eat root vegetables like potatoes and sweet potatoes, eat pasta in addition to all the other beans and vegetables and fruits they would be eating. What happened? Did they gain weight? No, they lost weight. They lost weight terrifically. They lost weight on average about a pound per week. And we followed them for 2 years after the study. The weight never came back. And we measured their metabolism. And we discovered that because of the diet changes they had made, their calorie burning speed was substantially higher than it had been before, about 15% increased after just 14 weeks on the vegan diet. So no, carbs don't make you fat. What makes a person gain weight is, as the potato comes out of the oven, on goes the gravy or the butter and the sour cream and the cheese and the bacon bits. The fatty toppings are where the calories are.
Holy smokes. And that brings us to a great question. But before I ask that, let me ask you this. The two-year follow-up period, did the majority of the study participants continue to eat the vegan diet, or were they able to return to their normal diet and just by some miracle of medicine, the weight never came back on?
No, they liked the diet. They stuck with it. It's what typically happens when a person's been on a vegan diet for a couple of months. They think, easier than I thought. I like how I feel. I like how I look, and they just stick with it. No, if a person does it for a while and then they abandon it and they go back to spam and gravy, no, the weight's going to come back.
All right. And so I think I know how you're going to answer this question from Billy, but nonetheless, let's put it out there. Billy's question, true or false, a vegan diet is too restrictive, too hard to follow long term.
Okay, it turns out to be false, but you know, many people, it's a really good question because it comes up all the time. When people imagine, I'm going to be vegan, they're not too sure what you would eat. Am I just going to eat salad? That doesn't seem enough to me. And so people do have that concern. And we see this in our clinic and we see it in research studies. However, what happens, it's kind of like going to the swimming pool. Once you jump into it, you like it a whole lot more than you thought you were going to. You know, people stick their toe in the water, and then they jump in and the water's fine. So what we discover, when people go on a vegan diet, for the first week or so, they're thinking, okay, what can I eat? And they're discovering, okay, I can make chili with, instead of meat, I'll do a bean chili. Okay, instead of ground beef on my pasta, I'll put a marinara sauce and a arrabbiata sauce. They'll discover all of the different soups they can have, all the different meals. And then between the surprising range of choices and the physical results that come in quite rapidly, the people just tend to find it very easy, inexpensive, and something that they just really want to stick with. So people imagine it as harder than it is. Once they get into it, they find that it works well. Now, this is not true for every diet. With a gluten-free diet, I've got to tell you, people will often say, gee, that really is hard. And that feeling tends to persist. Sometimes with raw diets, people say that, but getting the animals off your plate, no, pretty easy.
You just mentioned inexpensive as one of the qualifiers there. Interesting, because we have a question from Barney who said, true or false, Dr. Barnard, a vegan diet costs 1.5 times more than the average diet?
Ah, okay, false. Great question. We actually published a study on this in JAMA Network Open, where we looked at 244 people. Half of them stayed on their current diet. The other half went on a low-fat, completely vegan diet, a plant-based diet. And we tracked their weight and many other things, but we also tracked how much money they were spending. And they did spend more on vegetables. They spent more on fruit, somewhat more on beans and grains, but they're spending a whole lot less on meat. I mean, you're not buying meat anymore. Less on cheese. You're not buying that anymore. And the net change between increased expenditures at the produce department and less at the meat case, what we discovered is the average person was saving about 16% on their food costs. And over 365 days, the savings are about $500. So just one person going vegan is going to save about $500 a year.
Now imagine if that's an entire family that makes the change. You're talking sometimes into the thousands, depending on how many heads are living under the one roof.
And then a lot of other things happen too. I mean, you're spending in many cases less on medication and people feel better. But on the other hand, you might have to go shopping for new clothes. So you might be, that happens all the time. People lose weight and they think, you know, I can't fit into these things anymore. Chuck, you know about that.
I do.
So people may have to buy some new clothes here and there.
That's just the balance of life, the yin and the yang, as the philosophy goes. Let's jump down to a question from Daryl. This one is a complete change of pace, but I think that the guys in the audience are really going to want to listen to this one. True or false, from Daryl, Dr. Barnard, men who eat a vegan diet have a lower sperm count.
Oh, wow. You know, well, first of all, false. But you know who does have a lower sperm count? And researchers have studied these things because infertility is common and increasing. And it's increasingly common, and quite often it's the guy who's having issues. So researchers have discovered that there's one particular food that seems to be associated with a low sperm count, and it is cheese. Researchers have gone into fertility clinics, taken sperm samples, and they find that you measure the morphology, that's the shape, the motility, do the sperm swim straight, and also just the absolute count. And what you see is that sperm interferes with all of them. As soon as those data came out, it didn't take long to explain it, because dairy products have estrogens in them that come from the cow. It's the female sex hormone. They are concentrated in the cheese. And so the guy, thinking that the cheese is good for him, is actually dosing himself with female sex hormones every day.
And well, let me just pile on here. I mean, we're talking about lower sperm count, shooting down that myth. Let's also jump to another myth that we've talked about, and that is the myth of man boobs on a plant-based diet. So true or false, from Chuck, a vegan diet will in fact cause a man to grow boobs.
Sorry, false. Might make them go away. Now there is, who came up with this word man boobs, really? I mean, what do you mean is a guy has a little, shall we say, breast enhancement? Some people have said that soy products are causing man boobs. The idea is that there are phytoestrogens in soy and that causes it. Now, there are isoflavones in soybeans. They're called genistein, daidzein, glycine, and they are responsible, we believe, for the reduced cancer risk that you see in both men and women who consume soy products. Do they cause man boobs? No, they don't. And you can prove this yourself. Go to the beach. on a hot summer day, and if you see a guy who's a little portly and he's has some breast enhancement and he's pulling off his t-shirt, go right up to him and say, "Excuse me, how much tofu have you eaten this past week?" And he will look at you and say, "What are you talking about? I don't eat tofu. I don't eat any of that stuff. I eat pizza. I eat burgers and fries and normal food." And what you have shown to yourself is these people who have some breast enhancement, they're not vegans and they're not people consuming a lot of soy. What has happened to them in most cases is that they're consuming dairy products, they're consuming meat, they're getting some estrogens from those foods. But because those foods are dense in calories, they're gaining weight. And in a man's body or a woman's body, a fat cell actually converts testosterone to estrogen. In other words, his body fat has been making female sex hormones, and that caused the breast enhancement. The solution, go on a low-fat vegan diet. You will tend to lose weight, and the man boobs are going to go away.
I can speak to that from my own personal experience. Can't speak for anybody else, but everything you said definitely applied to me. When I was overweight, was definitely, I would say, ample-chested. And as soon as I lost the weight, that went away. And then it went away completely once I switched over to a plant-based diet. Gone. It was the most amazing thing. And yet, there was this pervasive theory that is so illogical when you think about it now, that eating a plant-based diet would cause these things. And it's like you're oblivious to the fact that in a lot of cases, if you're overweight, you already have them. That's just funny psychology, Dr. Barnard, to me. That's just funny psychology.
It is, and I don't know if it's people looking for reasons to sort of rationalize their diet choices, but it also, I guess most people wouldn't know that a fat cell has what we call an aromatase enzyme in it that converts testosterone into estrogens. And this is an issue not just for man boobs, but also for erectile dysfunction. A guy goes into a clinic, he's a little bit overweight, and the doctor has to explain to him, "Let's help you to lose weight in a healthy way. Vegan diet, low fat, is going to get you there." When that fat is trimmed away, there's not all these enzymes that are converting your testosterone into a female sex hormone. So taking that out of the picture is going to help all these things.
All right, let's stick with soy for a second, take a question from Cameron, jump back up the list. Cameron, true or false, soy is not a health food despite recent evidence to the contrary?
Huh, I wonder where she's going with this. Well, first of all, I think if anything is going to qualify as a health food, I would put soy there. Now, soy is optional. You don't have to have it. But what does it do for you? Soybeans seem to lower cholesterol a little bit. Soy products like miso, tempeh, tofu, soy milk were identified by Harvard researchers back in 2016 as among the foods that are most associated with weight loss, meaning when people bring them into their diet, they tend to lose more weight. Soy products reduce cancer risk for women and for men. I'm talking about breast cancer. It's reduced about maybe 30% for women consuming the most soy. For men, about the same reduction for prostate cancer. For women previously diagnosed with breast cancer, making sure that you're consuming a lot of soy is associated with reduced mortality and reduced recurrence. So soy, it's hard to find a food that is as handy as soy. Maybe the coolest thing about soy is you can transform it into everything. I mean, you can use this soybean to make milk, to make yogurt, to make bacon. I mean, one day they're going to be making snow tires out of soy. It's amazing. So you can transform it into things. And yes, those are processed foods, but they are always better than the meaty food that they're replacing.
All right, let's jump into neurology here for a second. Grab a question from Taylor. True or false, vegans are prone to brain fog because of inadequate nutrition?
That is not true, and I can't say I've heard that said, but there is such a thing as sort of brain fog or just general fatigue that can come from diet, and where you see this is on Thanksgiving. 2:30 in the afternoon, the family's trying to watch a football game after the Thanksgiving meal, and everybody's falling asleep. And the reason, in most cases, by the way, it's not the tryptophan in the turkey. That's what people blame. They'll say the tryptophan in the turkey caused your brain to make more serotonin, and now you're falling asleep. That actually ends up being false. What is true, though, is all that gravy and all that turkey fat and all the butter in your dessert has caused your blood to be fattier, thicker, more viscous. It doesn't flow as well. And your brain is just not oxygenating very well. And if you measure it, your blood pressure tends to go up And all these changes mean your brain is just not working well and you fall asleep. Unfortunately, for a lot of people, it's not just Thanksgiving. They have a fatty, meaty, or cheesy lunch, and about 2 in the afternoon, they feel like, I just need a nap. Take your diet. Get the animal products out. Keep the oils really low. That brain fog is going to disappear.
Sam, true or false? Speaking of feeling tired after you eat, true or false, vegans often feel tired and fatigued.
You know, this is one of the things, first of all, false. If you ask people who are in a research study and they are going vegan, you ask them, what have you experienced? Tell me what you've noticed physically. And what they will very often say is, I'm losing weight really easily. I'm not trying, but it's just happening. My blood sugar, I've been measuring, it's coming down. My doctor checked my cholesterol, it's coming down. I feel great. My joints feel better. I don't have migraines anymore. But one of the things I hear more than just about anything else is my energy's better. I don't know why. I just got better energy. This is true for everyday folks, and it's especially true for athletes who, and Chuck, you've seen this in the interviews you've done, where people say, my performance is just that much better since I've been on a plant-based diet. And part of that is for the reasons that we've described, that your blood doesn't have that viscosity that interferes not just with brain oxygenation, but with oxygenation of your muscles too.
Speaking of strength, let's grab one about bone strength here. Jamie, true or false, bones are often weaker when a person is eating a plant-based diet. I guess that goes back to the calcium conversation we were having.
Yeah, this is an important question. The answer is false. There's no reason why a plant-based diet would lead to problems with the bones. Now, you do have to have certain things in your life. You do need calcium. We already talked about that. There's plenty of calcium in green leafy vegetables, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, collards. Bring them into your routine. They've got plenty of calcium, as do beans. And of course, if you're having soy milk or whatever, I mean, there's more calcium than you could ever want. But do something else. Your bones need a reason to live. So if you haven't laced up your sneakers in a while, if you're not giving your body exercise, you need exercise. Exercise, you know, push-ups. Exercise your wrists so you don't fracture a wrist. Go for a walk or a run so you're working on your hips. You don't want a hip fracture. And all the rest of you benefits from exercise.
Charlotte, true or false, vegans are more likely to suffer from depression. I know I've heard this one a lot.
You know, you would think so. Because vegans have to put up with questions like, where do you get your protein? And there's few things more depressing than being bombarded with ridiculous questions like that all day long. However, we put this to the test. We did a study with Geico Insurance because their national offices, their national headquarters, about 3 or 4 blocks from our office. And so we did a study with their Geico employees, both in the national office and in 9 other cities where there are Geico facilities. And what we found is that people starting a plant-based diet, low-fat vegan diet, lose weight. If they got diabetes, it gets better. But we tracked mood. And what we found was that depression scores, which use a standardized instrument, depression scores they improved dramatically. People who had a little bit of depression, they got better. Your average person's mood improved. Same with anxiety. And another researcher named Bonnie Bezold did similar studies, and she found that plant-based diets are associated with substantially better mood. So there you have it. By the way, if you suffer from depression, don't throw your medications in the trash. Continue to get medical help because depression can be a serious thing. But let's get diet on your side. And a healthy plant-based diet is what you want.
Take a question from Ty. This too has been in the news of late. True or false, Dr. Barnard, vegans are more likely to develop an eating disorder?
Oh, wow. Back probably 20-some years ago, researchers were noticing that people who didn't eat meat, there seemed to be an association with eating disorders. And they got the idea that if you were vegan, you're restricting your foods. And so that's going to lead you to restrict more and more and more, and you'll end up with anorexia. But looking at this more closely, the truth came out, which was the reverse, that people who tended to want to avoid certain foods, either because they had a little bit of overweight, and, you know, maybe they're 12 or 13 years old and the other kids tease you. And at that age, you don't know what to do. So people just stop eating. For whatever reason, people want to avoid foods. very often the first foods people wanted to avoid were meat and that kind of thing. So in other words, the eating disorder or the desires to change came first. And so when people have anorexia, very often meat is completely disgusting to them. And so which is really important, because in treatment of anorexia and eating disorders, the last thing you want to do is to force somebody to be eating meat. People consider it disgusting because, let's face it, you know, I mean, it's the remains of a slaughtered animal, and many people can't get that out of their minds, of course. Same with dairy products. So no, the vegan diet doesn't cause eating disorders. It's sort of a sign that a person is making diet choices for whatever reason, sometimes good reasons, sometimes not good reasons. But meat is something people throw out. I suspect that if children were raised on healthy vegan diets, eating disorders would be much less common, partly because kids wouldn't have abnormal weight gain. And abnormal weight gain is often the reason that sparks the eating disorder. And the other thing is that these foods are pretty easy to love, that to eat grains and beans and vegetables and fruits. It doesn't freak anybody out. People aren't afraid of those things in the same way as people may not want to eat a chicken gizzard or liver or, you know, other animal parts, which people don't react so well to, as you can imagine.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I know of someone in my life who did struggle with anorexia and was able to triumph, luckily. I mean, it was a hellacious battle that they faced, but was able to triumph with it and maintained a vegetarian diet afterward. Never had any interest in eating meat, and I think that speaks to the heart of what it is you were just telling us about. They never forced themselves to eat the meat, even while they were in recovery. And to this day, they are still meat-free.
Chuck, I have to tell you, back when I was in my own training, in medical training, I worked for quite some time on a children's psychiatry ward, and there were kids who had anorexia. And back then, it's sad to say, these kids were really pushed to eat foods that were frankly disgusting to them. That was a huge mistake, and it put these kids in a terrible position. The thing to do is to give the kids the foods that love them back, the foods that won't threaten, the foods that really support health. And there's a great writer, Victoria Moran, whom you know, who wrote a book a number of years ago called The Love Power Diet. It was about dealing with eating disorders, and part of the solution was a healthy vegan diet. Hey, by the way, Chuck, can I come back to the depression question that you asked earlier?
Because talking
about psychiatric issues made me realize there's been a real breakthrough in recent years looking at mood. And you know about how people have become aware that inflammation is an issue in many disorders. It's sore joints, and inflammation is actually part of heart disease, that inflammation in the arteries tends to lead to artery blockages. Psychiatry researchers have discovered that in depressed individuals, inflammatory compounds that are produced in the body seem to be getting into the brain and causing brain issues. So some people are describing depression as an inflammatory disorder. And so it puts a whole new spin on things. And when they discovered that, that could be part of the reason why a vegan diet is good, because a vegan diet is sort of the classic anti-inflammatory diet. So you may still need medication or other treatments, but get your diet squared away, and that may actually be going to the cause of it.
Yeah, and if you're watching or listening to this right now and you want to do a little bit deeper dive, it's interesting that you bring that up. Dr. Will Bolsiewicz and I just talked about that on a recent episode that had to do with the gut-brain axis. We really went into that, the effect that inflammation and leaky gut can play in terms of your overall cognitive ability, your risk of depression, mental health in general. And it is staggering the way that science is now starting to rethink how the gut and the brain talk to each other. It may not actually always start up here. It may, in fact, start down below and work its way up and trigger those types of depressive symptoms you're talking about. Just fascinating the way that we're discovering these types of things now.
It sure is. And the answer can come from below as well.
Absolutely. No question about it. All right, let's grab two more here before we take it home. We haven't talked much about the environment yet, and we'd be remiss if we didn't touch on that, because obviously diet has a huge role in the environment. And Liam wrote in wondering, true or false, Dr. Barnard, the benefits of a plant-based diet for the environment are often exaggerated.
I'd say false. I have to say the benefits of a vegan diet are regrettably underappreciated and often ignored. Now, when people see a special on what's happening to the rainforest, and they know that the demand for meat is leading people to tear down these age-old forests to plant feed crops for the animals. People get concerned about that, but then they forget about it on the way to McDonald's. And we see it's not just tearing out the forests to create feed crops that are never going to human beings, but are going to animals. But also just here in this country, when you fly over it or drive across the country, you see acre after acre after acre of corn or soy that is not ever going to feed a human being. It's going to feed chickens. It's going to feed pigs. It's going to feed cows. And in addition to just that huge loss of acreage, you then put fertilizer on them. You put pesticides on them. You irrigate them. And then that means the pesticides and the fertilizer trickle into the waterways and cause the overgrowth of the natural bacteria and other and algae and other things in the waterways that ultimately end up leading to a dead zone. We have a huge dead zone down in the Gulf of Mexico. It's as big as New Jersey, and that comes from fertilizer as a result. It's causing overgrowth of algae that then dies off, and it kills everything in its path, unfortunately. The movie Seaspiracy that came out a few years ago pointed out that fishing is the cause of most of the plastics that are in the ocean. Now, it's not drinking straws or Coke bottles. Those are issues too. But it's huge, huge, enormous amounts of fishing netting material that ends up being discarded and is a huge polluter. So we haven't even gotten to the, 80 million or more cows belching methane into the atmosphere. So no, I think I have to say that the benefits of a vegan diet are huge and are underappreciated. And I'm hoping people will see it and be able to act on it.
Last question of the day comes to us from Harper. True or false, a vegan diet can lower the risk of certain cancers, but also increase the risk of others?
Now, that's a good one. Well, I'd have to say false because I've never heard of any cancer that is more common on a vegan diet. So many cancers are much less common, and they come in really two groups. One is the digestive cancers. Colorectal cancer is the obvious one, but many others are linked to meat consumption. You get the meat out of your diet, you're going to do better. The other is the hormonally related cancers, breast cancer, prostate cancer, and many others. And these are linked not just to meat, perhaps, but dairy especially. And with dairy, we've talked about estrogens that are in dairy products and linked to breast cancer, and perhaps linked as well to prostate cancer. But dairy products also contain, as their number one nutrient, sugar. Not just any sugar, but lactose. And when lactose doesn't break down because you can't digest it, you're going to be a person who's lactose intolerant, fine. That's good because that means you're not going to drink milk. That means you're going to choose something healthier. The danger is the person who is lactose tolerant, and they can break that lactose into glucose and galactose. The galactose seems to be associated with ovarian cancer as well as other issues. So there are plenty of reasons to get weaned, not drink milk after the age of infancy, drink your mom's milk, never drink milk from a cow, and to avoid the animal products. And reducing cancer risk is one of them.
Now, I know we covered a lot of ground here on the show today, but I would imagine that you also covered some of it in your book, The Power Foods Diet, that's available now. There's a link to pick up your copy in the show description, in the episode notes, or just head down to your local book retailer and pick up a copy. Did you get into any of this in your book, Dr. Barnard?
There are so many myths about plant-based diets, and yes, we tackle them in the Power Foods Diet. And I'm really hoping that people will share the Power Foods Diet with their friends or family members who are struggling with weight loss, because you really can set aside the calorie count. You could take that food scale, throw it away. All of these benefits you can have because the foods are going to be the foods that nourish you and bring the weight loss in an automatic and healthy way.
Absolutely. And it was such a fun night on March 26th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., where we had the Power Foods Revolution. We were there. Chef Dustin Harder came up from Atlanta to join us. Stephanie Ignafo and her family were there as well. We just had a grand old time. And I want to thank everybody who came out that night because, man, it's so much fun when we get together, Dr. Barnard, and do these shows in person with the live audience, with the exam roomies. I mean, you just can't match that energy.
It really is. I have to say, people came and they learned a lot. I'm happy to say I learned a lot. I always learn a lot from hearing the questions and the experiences that people have. But the number one thing that emerges is just excitement. People love the foods that love them back. And it really, for so many people, allows them to turn a page and really start living again. So, Chuck, thank you for being a fantastic MC, as you always are. Thank you for leading the charge. And thanks for making it happen.
Oh, you flatter me, sir. But really, it's
but my pleasure. It is well deserved, because you knocked it out of the park, Chuck.
I mean, I'm living a dream, Dr. Barnard. So I'm glad that you think so. Thank you. I also want to say thank you to Allison Mahoney, who is there. Allison, of course, intimately involved with the Gregory J. Ryder Memorial Fund, which is powering today's episode of the Exam Room podcast. And the Gregory J. Ryder Memorial Fund supports organizations like the Physicians Committee that carry on the love that Greg had for animals by promoting plant-based health and working to end animal abuse, while also emphasizing programs that promote systemic change and also benefit people. And you see their banner right now on the screen below. You can visit them online at gregoryreiterfund.org. That's Gregory Ryder, spelled R-E-I-T-E-R, fund.org. Really a phenomenal organization, and it's always so good to see Allison, Dr. Barnard.
Allison has done such a beautiful job in carrying forward Greg's heart and his vision and the kindness and compassion. So thank you, Allison.
All right. And if you have not yet signed up to become an Exam Room VIP, do that today for free. You'll be the first to know about our big live events that are coming up. Plus, you'll get exclusive tips and behind-the-scenes notes from the show. And best of all, you can support our work here at the Physicians Committee that truly does help to make the world a healthier and more compassionate place. Sign up right now, absolutely for free, pcrm.org/examroomVIP. Dr. Barnard, you're VIP, aren't you?
Of course. Isn't everybody?
My man. That's what I like to hear. All right. Thanks for all your time today, knocking out all of these true or false questions for us.
Thank you, Chuck.
Be sure to join us for the Exam Room Live every Wednesday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on the Physicians Committee's YouTube channel or Facebook page. True or false, that is the best opportunity for you to ask our experts your questions. True. So set a reminder to join us then, or of course, you can always catch the replay right back here every Thursday on the podcast. You know, recently we talked about a study showing that fasting increases the risk of heart disease, and yet there is some skepticism surrounding that. Dr. Columbus Batiste was with us on that episode where we looked under the hood at those findings. But now there's another study on fasting that's capturing a lot of attention as well. And this one was done by researchers at Johns Hopkins. And it looks at whether time-restricted eating or total caloric intake is more important when it comes to weight loss. And heading into the study, researchers admit that they already knew that most people who fast eat somewhere in the ballpark of 200 to as much as 550 fewer calories every day. So they wanted to level that playing field to see, well, what if all things were equal and everyone was eating the same amount of calories regardless of time of day? Does fasting still matter? So they found 41 people who had obesity and prediabetes for the study, and here is what they found. I'll read to you from the press release that came across our desk here. They say researchers assigned participants to either the 10-hour eating window group or a particular eating pattern for 12 weeks to compare weight loss and other measures of metabolic health. Participants in both groups received prepared meals with identical macronutrient and micronutrient compositions, as well as instructions on when to consume the meals. The time-restricted eating group was instructed to eat only between the hours of 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. and consumed most of their calories before 1 p.m. every day, while the usual eating pattern group ate between 8 a.m. and midnight, so a much bigger window there, and consumed most of their calories before 5 p.m. After 12 weeks, they say, both groups lost about the same amount of weight, and there were no real differences in fasting glucose, waist circumference, blood pressure, or lipid levels. And according to the authors, these findings suggest that if or when TRE, or time-restricted eating interventions, induce weight loss, it's likely, in part at least, due to a reduction in calories, and therefore
and therefore clinicians can counsel patients that TRE may help them lose weight by decreasing their caloric intake. But all things being equal, it seems to be calories more so than the time that those calories are eaten. So more research is definitely still needed, but you can check out the study for yourself right now. It is in the episode notes. And also check me out on May 16th and 17th in Rochester, Minnesota. Going to be at the Lifestyle Medicine Pathway to Health and Happiness Symposium there, home of the Mayo Clinic. Great event presented by the Lotus Health Foundation. Tickets and a full list of speakers are available right now at lotushealthfoundation.org or click the link in the episode notes. But yeah, that's a pretty interesting study about time-restricted eating and caloric consumption, isn't it? Very interesting. So they leveled the playing field and found that it really had no difference. But the upside, more than anything, was the fact that just by having that time-restricted eating window, people tended to eat fewer calories if they weren't prescribed a specific menu like they were in the study. So maybe there's a little bit of food psychology going on there. Very interesting findings. Very interesting findings. Certainly raised my health IQ by a point or two today. And if you feel like you did as well, be sure to follow the Exam Room podcast by the Physicians Committee on Apple Podcast or wherever it is that you get your shows. And be sure to also leave a 5-star rating and a nice review. Each one of those helps us climb a little bit higher in the podcast rankings. And the higher we climb, the more likely it is that somebody who is searching for their own truth in health is able to access this information. And we know how powerful nutrition knowledge can be. And for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to our own man of truth, our truth seeker extraordinaire, Dr. Neil Barnard, for being here as we continue to raise our health IQs. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.